This is a reading of the book by Rudolf Steiner, actually two books, entitled A Way of Self-Knowledge, and the book The Threshold of the Spiritual World. I am at the moment reading A Way of Self-Knowledge. Meditation 6, the eye body, or thought body. The feeling of being outside the sensory body is stronger during experiences in the astral body than it is during experiences in the elemental body. In the elemental body, you feel yourself outside the realm of the sensory body, but you still sympathize with it. In the astral body, on the other hand, you experience the sensory body itself as something outer. When you cross over into the elemental body, you sense something like an expansion of your own being, whereas, when you live into the astral body, you feel as if you were jumping over into another being. You feel a spiritual world of beings working into this being. You have a sense, too, that you are somehow connected or related to those beings. Gradually, you come to understand how these beings stand in relation to one another. For human consciousness, the world expands toward the world of the spirit. You may see the spiritual beings, for example, those who determine the sequential epochs and qualities of human evolution. These are the time spirits, or primal forces. You may also meet other beings, beings whose existence unfolds psychically, so that their thoughts are also real forces of nature. You will recognize, then, that it is only to our normal sensory perception that the forces of nature appear as our senses normally believe them to be. You will realize that in reality, wherever a force of nature is active, it is the thought of a being that is expressed, just as the human soul expresses itself through hand movements. This does not mean that you must theorize your way through to the beings who stand behind the processes of nature. For those who can live in the astral body, the relationship to those beings is just as concrete and non-conceptual as the relationship they enjoy in the ordinary world with other human beings. Among the beings into whose realm one enters in this way, a graduated order may be distinguished. One may therefore speak of, quote-unquote, a world of higher hierarchies. From this point of view, the beings whose thoughts appear to ordinary perception as natural forces may be called the spirits of form. In the sensory world, you view a plant as an outer being. Experience in the astral world requires that you feel your own being in the sensory world also as something outer. Unless a second experience is added to it, this experience of being outside what, from the perspective of ordinary life, must seem to be the full extent of your being, can feel tremendously painful. But if you engage in the energetic inner soul work that leads to the proper strengthening and intensifying of the soul's life, the pain need not become especially acute. This is because a gradual entrance into the second experience can occur at the same time one feels one's way into the astral body. This second experience consists in experiencing all that was previously in your own soul as a kind of memory. The result is that you begin to relate to your own capital I, as it was before, as you relate to memories in the sensory world. Only through such an experience can you become fully conscious that you really live in a very different world from the sensory world, and that that is where your own true being is. From now on, you know that what you thought was your I, and carried with you, is something other than what you really are. Now you can stand over against yourself. You can form an idea of what stands before your soul, of which you said, quote, "That is what I am," unquote. But now you no longer say, quote, "That is what I am," unquote. Instead you say, quote, "That is something I bear within me," unquote. As, in your previous everyday life, your eye felt independent in relation to its memories. So now your newly acquired eye feels independent of that earlier eye. It feels it belongs to the world of purely spiritual beings. And from this experience, and not some theory, you recognize what your eye being, as you viewed it before, really is. It now appears as a fabric of memory ideas that are produced by the physical, elemental, and astral bodies, just as mirror images are produced by a mirror. No more than a person considers himself or herself to be one with his or her reflection in a mirror, does a soul that has experienced itself in the spiritual world consider itself the same being that experienced itself in the sensory world. The comparison with the mirror image is naturally only an analogy. After all, the mirror image ceases to exist when you move away from the mirror. The fabric that is woven, as it were, from memories and represents what you thought was your being in the sensory world has much greater autonomy than a mirror image. In its own way, it has its own being. Yet in comparison with your soul's true existence, it is like an image of your own true nature, of your own nature. Your true soul being feels that this quote-unquote image is necessary for its self-revelation. It knows its true being is something else, something about which it could not have achieved any self-knowledge had it not first seen its own reflection in that world, which, after its ascent into the spiritual world, became its outer world. The fabric of memories, which you now look on as your former I, we may call the I-body, or thought-body. In this context, the word body must be understood in a broader sense than usual. Body here means all that you experience as having to do with you, of which you say not that you are that, but that you have that, that it's yours. Only when clairvoyant consciousness reaches the stage where you can experience that everything you call yourself is a sum of memories, only then can you have any real experience of what is hidden behind what appears as death. Only then will you have attained a truly real world in which you feel yourself to be a being who can hold, as in a memory, all that is experienced in sensory existence. For to continue its existence, what has been experienced in sensory existence requires a being in whom it can be retained, just as memories of sensory being, for to continue its existence, what has been experienced in sensory existence requires a being in whom it can be retained, just as memories of sensory being are retained in the ordinary eye. Suprasensory cognition reveals that human beings exist in the world of spiritual beings where they hold their sensory existence within themselves like a memory. Therefore, to the question, what will become of all that I am now when I die? The clairvoyant researcher replies, you will be what you can retain of yourself by the strength of your existence as a spiritual being among other spiritual beings. You can cognize the nature of these spiritual beings, including your own. This knowledge is immediate experience. In this way, you will come to know that spiritual beings, including your own soul, have an existence for which sensory existence is a passing revelation. For everyday consciousness, as the first meditation showed, the physical body belongs to a world whose true relationship to the body is revealed only when it decays after death. But clairvoyant observation shows that the human I-being belongs and connects to a different world by means of very different bonds than those that connect the body to the laws of nature. The bonds that connect the I-being with the spiritual beings of the supersensory world are not affected in their inner being by birth and death. These connections reveal themselves in the life of the sensing body in a particular way, one that expresses suprasensory connections. Since the human being is a suprasensory being and appears as such to suprasensory observation, the suprasensory connection between one human soul and another is unaffected by death. Thus, in its primitive form, the vital question enters ordinary consciousness. After death, will I see the people I know and am connected to in earthly life? Genuine research, based on experience, enables you to answer this question with a resounding yes. If you strengthen your soul life in the ways I have described here and in other writings, you will experience your own soul being's spiritual reality in the world of other spirit beings. Moreover, by means of certain feelings which you can develop, you can help bring about this experience. In ordinary sensory experience, you may believe that it is your fate to respond to one thing positively and to another negatively. Objective self-reflection, however, will show that such feelings as sympathy and antipathy, love and hate, are among the strongest feelings that human beings can have. Our usual way of thinking considers that everything in life is necessary, that one must bear one's fate. This can take us some distance toward a detached attitude toward life. But more is necessary if we are truly to comprehend human nature. Certainly the usual way of thinking serves the life of the soul quite well. But one often notices that the sympathies and antipathies that people cast aside have disappeared only from their immediate consciousness. In truth, they have withdrawn into the depths of their being and exist there as a mood, or perhaps as a feeling of weariness or some other bodily feeling. True equanimity with regard to such tendencies can be achieved only when you proceed as you generally do when you seek to strengthen the soul, that is, by concentrated meditative dedication to a thought or feeling. The kind of thinking that produces mere intellectual insight is not enough. You must live intensely with such thoughts over a period of time, retaining them in your soul, while at the same time maintaining a distance from sensory experiences and memories. Practicing such an exercise will bring you to a certain basic soul mood toward your destiny. You can remove all antipathies and sympathies about your fate, so that finally you will be able to watch everything that happens to human beings like a detached observer watching a stream of water falling over a cliff and breaking upon the rocks. I do not intend to imply that you should become unfeeling and indifferent to your fate. Whoever is reduced to looking on everything that happens with indifference is certainly not on a fruitful path. You should certainly not remain unmoved in the face of the outer world just because what happens does not touch your own soul's destiny. Rather, you will see what plays before your eyes with pleasure or pain. Those striving for supersensory insight and cognition will not seek to be disinterested in life. Instead, they will experience a transformation of the kind of interest that their eye takes in all that touches it by fate. It may even happen that through this transformation, the liveliness of one's feeling is strengthened, not weakened. In ordinary life, people shed tears about what fate brings to their soul. You can, however, reach a perspective from which you have the same strong feeling, whether the misfortune is your own or another's. Generally, people can achieve this level of experience more readily in relation to blows from fate than they can, for example, with regard to fate-bestowed abilities. You do not so easily feel joy over someone else's ability. It is easier to feel joy when you possess that ability yourself. When self-reflection penetrates the depths of the soul, we discover much about the selfish joy we take in our own abilities and accomplishments. Living meditatively, intensively, and repeatedly with the thought that it makes no difference, as far as the progress of human life is concerned, whether you or someone else can do something, can bring you a long way toward a genuine equanimity about what you feel to be your innermost destiny. When properly directed, such a strengthening of the soul through the power that lives in thinking never leads to a simple numbing of your feelings about your capacities. Instead, you transform those feelings and experience the need to behave in accordance with that transformation. We have here an indication of the direction in which the strengthening of the soul life through the power that lives in thinking must lead. You learn to recognize something in yourself that appears to your soul as a second being within it. The meaning of this insight becomes clearer when we connect it with the realization that in the ordinary course of life, we ourselves bring about this or that event in our destiny. Often an event could not have happened had we not first acted in a certain manner. What happens to us today is often simply a result of what we did yesterday. To advance in soul experience, you may undertake a review of your life. Doing so, you can seek out everything that shows you how earlier in your life you yourself prepared the later events of your destiny. You can try to reach back to that point in childhood when your consciousness awoke, and from which moment on you can remember what you experienced. If you review the events of your destiny without your usual egocentric sympathies and antipathies, then, when you reach that moment of consciousness in childhood, you will be able to say to yourself, quote, "At that moment, it first became possible for me to feel myself within myself and to work consciously on my soul. Although this I was there before, I had not been conscious of its working upon me. Nevertheless, it brought me my capacity to know all that I now know." Unquote. Thus, something you cannot know by intellectual understanding can bring about a new relationship to your own destiny. You learn to view the events of your destiny with detachment. You watch them approach without judgment. You see yourself in the being who caused the events. Once you see yourself in this way, the conditions of your destiny, given to you at birth, seem to your soul something connected to you. You can then push through to the following realization, quote, "Just as I have worked on myself since I awakened to consciousness, so I was already working on myself before my present consciousness awoke." Unquote. Working your way through to a superordinate I-being within the ordinary I leads not only to the recognition that your thoughts bring a theoretical understanding of such a higher superordinate I, it also leads to the experience of the living being of this I in its reality as power in you, and to the sense that the ordinary I is a creation of the superordinate I. This feeling marks the true beginning of seeing the spiritual nature of the soul. If nothing beyond this feeling occurs, that is because you have allowed yourself to stop at the beginning. At the beginning, the feeling may be dull, barely noticeable. It may remain so for a long time. But if you pursue with strength and energy the path that led you to it, this same feeling will, in the end, bring you to the vision of the soul as a spiritual being. Whoever has achieved that level of seeing easily understands that those who have no experience in this area are likely to believe that anyone who claims to have seen such a superordinate eye has simply fallen prey to illusion, fantasy, or autosuggestion. A person capable of such vision knows that such objections arise only from lack of experience. Those who practice seriously all that I have described in this meditation will learn to differentiate between illusion and reality. The inner experiences and activities that a true soul path demands will lead them to exercise the greatest caution regarding illusion and reality in relation to themselves. If you strive concentratedly to experience yourself as a spiritual being in the superordinate I, you will consider the experience described at the beginning of this meditation to be central. The rest you will look upon as an aid for the soul's journey. The end of Meditation 6.